Donna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbore and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning once again, and welcome back to Happy Hour here on K104 with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. I'm Frankenberry. Thank you again for joining us on another Sunday morning here. Ladies, how are we doing this week?
I'm good, and you know what? Something has just occurred to me. So when we first started this show, what are we, 8-9 years into it now?
Something like that, yeah.
It was late at night, and we called it Happy Hour, and we used to throw a toast out there and stuff, and so we've gone to morning time, but we kept our name, Happy Hour, and it's kind of occurred to me that it's probably more appropriate now than ever for day drinking.
That is a very valid point there, Miss Pesky. That is a very valid point.
Ooh, boy, is it.
Yes, well, yeah. I try to think about it as just the fact that the show is an hour long now, and we talk about happy.
Oh, it is true. I mean, obviously, it has double meaning. It's just
right.
trying to find humor in amongst insanity.
Now, for the folks that are out there listening right now, if you want to crack a beer, I know it's 7 in the morning, go right ahead.
As long as you're
or a mimosa.
Or a mimosa. There you go.
Yeah. Or six.
That's right. If you have no plans for the Sunday, just kick your feet back.
You know, why the heck not? Although we have a few things to talk about this morning. And, you know, if I may, since I know Carol has something that's probably going to be very endearing and lovely and awe-inspiring to talk about, so let's let her go first.
My God, you're already rolling your eyes at Carol, and she hasn't even spoken yet.
Yeah.
Thank because God. I got something that's really bad.
So let's start with the good stuff. I mean, after all, it is Happy Hour.
Did you say bad or sad?
Bad. Oh, not sad. No. Oh. No, bad. So well, bad is good.
We always chit-chat for a minute or two before we go on the air, and Frankie Barry was asking anything that was going on, and I said not a lot, other than I had a deer come up to me and want to be fed.
Where were you?
I was in Pennsylvania and walking my dog Ginger, and there was a deer maybe 10 feet a doe, and she was just eating the grass, whatever she's eating. She wasn't bothered by us at all. I thought, that's interesting. So then Ginger does her thing. She poops, and I reach into my pocket to get a poop bag, and as the poop bag starts crinkling, little Miss Doe pops her head up and comes right over to me.
Really?
Wow.
And sniffing, I mean, arm's length. If I had something other than a bag of poo, I'd put it better.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, it was really cool. I'll send you guys pictures. I took a little video, too. So it was really kind of cool. So clearly somebody is feeding her, but I've never seen a deer that domesticated.
Yeah, that's so one time we were having it was either Easter or Thanksgiving dinner at my ex and her sister-in-law's house, and the whole family's there. And as I was getting ready to leave, I was taking stuff and walking down the long steps from the patio or the porch, and I was putting stuff in the car. And at one point, as I'm putting stuff in the car, I turned around, and there was literally a deer standing within a foot of me. And I stood there, and I looked, and I went, "Hey, what's going on, guy?" And I put my hand out, and I started scratching his head. And he was very pleased with that. But the funny part is that one of my ex's cousins came out, looked down the stairs, and yelled back into the house, "Hey, guys, Steve's outside petting a deer." And then and all I heard from inside the house is, "Of course he is."
That's funny. And these were like adult deer, not little baby deer that don't know any better to go up to human beings.
No, it was an adult. I'm looking to pull up a picture right now to text you as we're talking.
Yeah, no, mine was an adult as well. I mean, I'm sure, you know, like Carol said about the one that came up to her, I'm sure folks in this particular neighborhood were probably feeding this deer, thus the reason he wasn't wasn't scared of me. But boy, I'll tell you what, that'll startle you when you turn around and you're eye to eye with a big tall dude who's interested in what you're putting in the car.
Yeah, because I actually heard, I mean, deer are beautiful and they're adorable and I love them, but I have heard rumors that they can get a little bit nasty if they want to be nasty and, you know, like stomp you.
Oh, yeah.
So that's good.
That was a concern I had for a moment, but then once he put his head down and I started scratching, I was like, okay, that's no worries now.
Wow. Did I ever tell you guys the story of when I was chased by a deer?
No, but that's a video I wish I had.
Speaking of aggressive, it was years ago when I lived in Pleasant Valley, and I had a dog, a Dalmatian then, and she bolted off into the woods. I'm like, oh, man. She wasn't on a leash. We had an electric fence, but she would, on occasion, go over it. Bolts out, and we had 6 acres there, so she goes running out into the woods, and I'm like, oh, no, here we go. Probably 15 seconds go by and she comes running back. I'm like, well, that's some crap luck. Look at that. She's coming back. And coming behind her is a mama doe running, chasing
her
down.
Oh, no.
And I'm standing in the side yard. I mean, she kept coming and kept coming so fast and so close that I actually hopped behind a tree because I'm concerned. It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. You know what you needed right then, Carol?
What?
After the dog took off, the second you saw the dog turn around and come back at you, you needed Benny Hill music.
Yeah.
Well, since we're sharing animal tales, let me tell you what's going on at my house.
Oh, you've always got good ones. Please go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, this one takes the cake. So you guys remember? I'm sure you do. Maybe I don't know, a month or so ago, not that long ago, there were in my neighbor's yard. I spotted a little family of foxes, two little babies, yep. And what appeared to be a mama fox. And they were so adorable, but they were off in my neighbor's yard, and, you know, so I couldn't really get that close. But I took some pictures and stuff and posted them on Facebook. You know, they remind me of dogs. I'm such a dog person. Like, oh, how cute, how cute. Well, they disappeared, and I don't know much about fox, so I just figure, like, you know, they must roam around and then go find a mate and find someplace else to live or whatever. You know, I figured that's what they do. Unlike my raccoons, who have basically set up shop and never left for the last 2 years.
And the reason they've done that is?
Oh, Carol, because sometimes I feed the birds, okay? Jesus. But anywho, so I do put bird seed out on my deck for the birds, but the raccoons seem to like it. And it's so funny because if I don't put out any bird seed, I don't get any raccoons. It's like they have noses better than canines. But anyway, I digress. So you know, a few weeks have gone by. I haven't seen the foxes. I figured they left, you know, fine. So the other morning, this is just the other morning, I'm up early, I am, traipsing around my house, getting coffee, doing my thing. When I pass by, I have these sliding glass doors, as you guys know, that pass by my deck, and I'm going back and forth and back and forth, and all of a sudden, on one of my back and forth trips, I spotted something that I hadn't spotted earlier in the morning while I was getting my coffee, and upon closer inspection, it appears to be poop. Now, I don't have on my desk poop, and my dogs live at my parents' house, so it obviously wasn't them. It was broad daylight. It was about 7 or so in the morning, so usually the raccoons are fairly nocturnal. So I'm like, what on earth? So I figured, maybe a cat came by or something, and I didn't notice it. So, of course, I check the videotape. And on the videotape, between getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning and having 2 cups of coffee by 7 o'clock in the morning, one of those foxes paid a visit
to my deck for the sole purpose of pooping on it. It had, guys, it had no other reason. It showed up, do-do-do-do. It looked around, do-do-do-do-do. It squatted, do-do-do-do-do. And it left. So now, I'm like, you son of a gun. Why would you do that? So, of course, now I've got to figure out a way to clean up fox poo. Okay.
Without touching it or going to
without touching
near.
It or breathing it in or having it anywhere near me.
Right.
So that happens. And I figure it's just an aberration. Well, let's fast forward a day or two after that when that son of a bee sting not only came back up on my deck, this time in the middle of the night, and did it again. but wait, there's more.
Wait, there's more.
Not only do I notice it again on my deck, but this time I go out my front door, where I have a front porch, and this son of a, you know what, has me surrounded by poop. Front and back. So now I'm like, this means war. I check all my cameras, and sure enough, I think it's one, but you know, I can't, it could be two. Could be two. I don't know how many. But, you know, I'm assuming it's just one that's circling my house, dropping off, you know, little presents in the middle of the night. But it's not just on my front porch, you guys. So deck, front porch, all over my paver walkway. I'm like, what is going on? So now I decided I got to pay attention to my surroundings. And I look at the front of my house where, you know, I have a front porch. And there's, you know, what do you call it? Lattice that, you know, goes from the front porch down to the earth. And there's landscaping in front of that. And I got like four or five good sized holes underneath that lattice.
Uh-oh.
Underneath my porch. Yeah. So I had to make a phone call.
I have two potential theories here on what's going on.
Tell me.
One, they're pissed off because they're meat eaters and all you've been caring about is the birds and the raccoons. And they haven't been putting anything out for them. So they're like, screw you, lady.
That's so you think it's bite poo. Okay.
Theory B is somebody whose name you've put in the cup is seeking revenge, and you haven't seen these foxes because they've been training them incognito to poop on your porch.
Yes. I think you're onto something there. Yeah. I do. In fact, I would think that maybe the people responsible for training these foxes are the neighbors where these foxes were born. Because we have a little Hatfield and McCoy thing going on.
Oh.
And really?
And they probably said, you know what? I'm gonna drop these kicks off up the hill.
Well, and I'm sure it was easy enough for them to do because, I mean, hell, all you got to do is what? Go to YouTube and search out a video for, you know, how to train wild foxes to poop on a neighbor's porch.
Right. There's got to be a million videos like that. Because it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does this have to do with the massive structure they built too close to your property line?
Well, yeah, and that's where these little foxes were living. I'm convinced of it because they would come out and then they would disappear underneath that area. And then they disappeared for good, which I thought was for good. And now I think they're living underneath my house. Where, incidentally, I do know that I have a groundhog living underneath my house there as well, which I didn't really mind because it's a groundhog. Like, what's it going to do? But if I got a den of foxes, that's a whole different ball of wax, especially rude ones, because the groundhog doesn't leave me any gifts. Even the raccoons, as much time as they spend on my deck, they don't, you know what, where they eat, if you get my drift.
Right.
So, yeah. Now, here's the problem.
My parents had a very similar issue. They had a fox, mama fox, living under their front porch, and they're in a hole. They're in LaGrange, living under their front porch. That mama fox had like 4 or 5 babies. So they had to call a company that came with Habitat traps to trap them. Well, that process took several days. And if a baby went into the Habitat in the middle of the night, it screeched until the next day until somebody came and got it. I will not stand for that. I cannot do that.
No
way. So I don't know, but I did call the same company to see, because I'm not sticking my face underneath my front porch now to see what's living under there. That ain't happening. So somebody's got to stick their face under there, huh?
I said that's probably wise.
Yeah. I need a trained professional to stick his face underneath there. You know, I'll pay him to stick his face underneath there. So we'll see. So I'll find out. By this time next week, I will know exactly what the situation is. But meanwhile, I am literally stepping over fox dung no matter what way I leave my house.
Maybe they knew that you were getting lonely. You've been complaining about not being able to get together, and now you got a animal party going on at your house.
I've got an animal party. Here's my real theory. So my non-funny theory that I think is going on. Because I do know that I have a little bit of a mouse problem underneath my house as well. And I think that these boxes are sniffing. I think they smell mice and they're hungry, and I think that's why they're hanging around and, you know, waiting to catch a mouse or 10.
That's
what I think. Yeah, so I think I'm gonna have to get rid of the mice, the mices, and then maybe the fox will go someplace else. That's what I think.
Well, yeah. It certainly is an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Frankberry, any animal tales from you? You live on an animal sanctuary.
Well, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
I got nothing.
Yeah, actually, believe it or not, everything's been good. And though I will say that Sealy has brought more dogs, this time from South Carolina, back to the shelter, HVARS, if anybody's looking to adopt. She came back, her and her daughter did, with 27 dogs yesterday for the shelter.
Wow.
So, so they've got plenty to choose from. I think there's some puppies in there as well, and they were all very well behaved on the ride back, which is, you know, a rather long drive. So, you know, so there is that. And also the cows and the horses are in the same field right now, which can be kind of funny because the cows don't like the horses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no,
really?
They don't like the horse because the horses can be kind of, what's the best way to put it? They can be.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah. So the cows tend to keep to themselves in a corner. But no, everything else is it's normal crazy. So.
Huh. Now, how does she get all those pups back?
They rent a huge van and have a lot of carriers.
Oh, that would be such a fun trip.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Speaking of poop, oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. And believe it or not, that topic came up as if our audience right now has not heard enough of poop so far this morning. That topic did come up yesterday when my landlady, Celie, did remark that they only had one accident on the whole ride.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
we should have started the show with a little warning.
Exactly.
Well, and you know what? That might be possible if we had, before we started the show every single week, any idea what direction we're going before we go in. So,
another very, very good point. Yes, as as I like to say, we kind of seat of our pants it quite often. With this.
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
we do. I think doing that, like, we just go with the flow. There's no conflict among us when we do that.
No, not at all. But by the way, speaking of show, who do we have today? Because we got our guest coming up, right?
You missed it. She is the author of The Conflict Resolution Grant. So in all seriousness, we have coming up next Mesa Malachi. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's the author of a brand new book called The Conflict Resolution Grail, Awareness, Compassion, and a Negotiator's Toolbox. Timing couldn't be better for that. So I'm looking forward to talking with her when we get back from break.
All right. That sounds good. You've got Happy Hour this morning with John Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. Our guest is on the way, and I'm looking forward to asking her about Chapter 12, which I think is about poop. We'll be back. This is K104.
Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jenna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour here this morning on K104 with Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. And segment number two, as you know, if you do listen to the show on a weekly basis, is where we bring out one of our fantastic guests, and today is no exception.
Yeah, so the timing really could not be better for us having this guest with us today. So on the line with us, we have Mesa Malachi. She practices as a family lawyer and accredited mediator at Malachi Barristers in Toronto, Canada. Her strong interest in the complexities of interpersonal relationships and human dynamics led to a career of fighting for justice with training at Harvard Law School's Negotiation and Leadership Program and a family mediation internship at the Toronto Superior Court of Justice. She's no slacker. Her interest in what makes people tick prompted Mesa to be certified to administer and interpret the EQ1, which is an emotional quotient inventory tools that measure a set of competencies critical for influence, leadership, and success. In the political arena, Mesa served as a senior policy advisor to Ontario's health minister, the Honorable Deb Matthews, and engaged with multilateral interests and a variety of high-profile files. And she is here to talk to us about her brand new book, again, timing couldn't be better, The Conflict Resolution Grail, Awareness, Compassion, and a Negotiator's Toolbox. Mesa, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here with you today.
Maybe it's just a divine power that is at work here, and I know this is one of your major life work, but really the timing in the world couldn't be better for something like this to come out. We need you. We need this right now.
Thank you for that. I certainly do find that it's incredible that I first started writing this book some 6 years ago. As a litigator who practices family law every day, it obviously took me a long time to get it to the finish line. But you're absolutely right. I do find that I wrote this book with value to humanity in mind, and I do agree that in these unprecedented times, the timing of it couldn't have been possibly any better in terms of assisting everybody with the message that it has.
So let's start there then, and that's what Jonna and I always like to do, Jonna Frankieberry and I like to do, is to get the backstory. Tell us what your motivation was. Why did you want to write this? What do you want this to accomplish?
So yes, I mean I went to law school for a reason, and I enjoyed law school and I enjoyed being a lawyer. There was always something in me that felt like there was something missing, and I knew that one day I was going to write about something. But it wasn't really until I took up mediation training when I found what that something was, and when I became even a lot more passionate about practicing law, frankly, because I was able to view it from above, that these incredible conflict resolution tools and the literature on negotiation theory, most of the work coming from the Harvard Negotiation Project, I was so fascinated by the utility of them to the everyday person and to myself as a lawyer. It made me an immensely better lawyer once I got to question what my own conflict resolution style was, how I could be strategic and determine how to respond depending on what my opponent's conflict resolution style is, how I could be a much more effective problem solver. So when I took the mediation training, it changed my outlook on life, on my practice as a lawyer. It changed the way I behave towards a random stranger who tries to violate your boundaries. In a store, it a conflict is everywhere. It changed the way I respond to my own children, to my husband, and it got me thinking, why hasn't this incredible knowledge trickled down to the consciousness of the everyday person? I mean, I do call it the conflict resolution grail for a reason, and one of there are three reasons, and they're in the book, but one of the primary reasons was because there's a sacredness about this literature that I found, and I couldn't believe why lawyers, even who are in the business of dispute resolution on a daily basis, aren't being taught these skills in law school. But over and above that, the other reason is that as I got to know the literature and I fell in love with it, and it improves everybody's life, and everybody, especially our children, should be given these skills. The world wouldn't be where it is today if all of our kids were taught about that, and I would like to speak to that a bit later. But to answer your question, what was missing from the literature, I found, was the Eastern wisdom. So, there was nothing in there about how do you regulate emotions and how do you deal with the ego. And this, the great work that the Dalai Lama has done on compassion. And it all starts, I say in the book, the prerequisite to effective conflict resolution is awareness, is to catch yourself, to observe yourself every time that, you have an emotional flip, every time that you are not in control of your emotions, and the lag time between stimulus and response is too short for you to catch yourself. So I thought that was missing from the Western literature. And at the same time, these great books by the Dalai Lama that I had also fallen in love with, and I'm a great fan of Eckhart Tolle's. Eckhart Tolle is a spiritual guru, but he talks about conflict resolution. He doesn't call it that. He doesn't label it that, but that's exactly what he's talking about when he talks about the ego. And I couldn't understand, that the Eastern literature, really, the Eastern wisdom falls short as well, because it doesn't give people the practical tools. And so that's where the inspiration for the book came. How do I marry these two incredible bodies of work together in order to give everybody a complete and integrated approach to resolving conflict?
That's such, and that was a long answer, but it was a beautiful and perfect and powerful answer. And that is something that has struck me already. I'm not quite done reading it yet, but I'm enjoying it very much. It is not just here's a technique and here's a tool. Here's what you need to understand about the other person. Here's how you get from A plus B to the C that you want. It is not just the tools. Yes, they are in there, and I want to read something from the inside flap of your book. It says, Your solution to addressing human conflict goes beyond just the latest conflict resolution theory, negotiation techniques, and the interpersonal skills of a mediator. You draw on the strengths of human beings, their capacity for compassion, and their immense potential to change their subconscious programming through awareness. So you take it to you're marrying these completely, you would think on the surface, different bodies of work, but they're both valid and they're both powerful, and you've brought them together in an incredible way.
Thank you. Yes, I mean, when I was listening to Eckhart Tolle, and there was a period of my time of my life where I did, and I acknowledge him in the beginning of the book, because he did influence my life profoundly. And he talks about, for instance, that you're at a restaurant and the server brings you soup that's cold, and he says, there's nothing in telling the server that the soup is cold. And there's a chapter in the book where I talk about assertiveness and assertive self-expression, and I also talk about power in the book. So you absolutely must do that. In fact, it's our perfect right to do that, to be advocates for ourselves, to be advocates for our children, to show up in life and to make sure that we stand up when we see injustice. But you do that in a way where you do it without the anger. And we all get angry. I mean, that's a fact of life, which is where the awareness comes in. And the book also gets into the neuroscience of all of this, of how through repeated experience, every time we bring self-observation to our own negative emotions, to our own destructive emotions, we're a step ahead over time. Through neuroplasticity, there are changes in the structure of the brain, and there's an area behind the forehead called the prefrontal cortex that research now tells us is, you know, is thicker in, for instance, the brains of monks. So that's essentially you live your way into a mindful brain. You live your way into lengthening the that lag time between stimulus and response. So, you know, and so that's what it is. You have to tell the server that the soup is cold, but you don't do it in an angry manner. You do it in a civil way.
And I remember that specifically. Yeah. I've read his books, and I remember that excerpt specifically. Nor do you make it personal. It's not like you have to get offended because your soup is cold. You're just saying a fact. Keep it to the fact. Mesa, if I want to just ask you for a moment, and this is the kind of stuff that fascinates Jonna and I specifically. We've read books by Eckhart Tolle, and I'm not sure if Jonna's ever fully gotten through it, but it's powerful. but I want to speak to the person listening right now who is dealing with who obviously sees the conflict that we're dealing with on a national and global level at the moment, but also the person who's dealing with conflict at home or maybe at work. Let's bring it down to a very practical, someone's listening right now and they have conflict in their life that they wish they didn't. Where do they begin? What's one of your initial pieces of advice where they can move towards a resolution?
Right, it's an excellent question. I mean, again, the prerequisite to all of this is awareness. So you need to pay attention to how you unfold in the world and how you respond to conflict situations. Are you more the avoidant type of person where you try to avoid conflict? Are you aggressive? You know, but when I was talking about this, you know, the children being programmed, and I don't want to get into that right now because you asked me a very specific question. But we do sort of learn as kids that the range of conflict resolution behaviors is either to be passive or to be aggressive. But that's not all. And to sort of boil it down to a concrete example, which is what you asked for, I will give you an example. I was once driving down a road going to work when I faced a traffic jam. And every day I had gone to work and there was never a traffic jam on this street. And I noticed that nobody was getting outside their vehicle. Nobody was approaching this man with the stop sign to ask him why he was blocking the traffic. And that observation of mine on that day was very consistent with what the research tells us. And the study that I cite in the book by Thomas Moriarty, which is a very, very old study. I read it in Psychology Today back, I think it's 1978 study, but it's still very relevant, was replicated across multiple contexts. And it's called, Are We a Nation of Willing Victims? And the study showed that across multiple contexts, in the face of bad quality behavior, most people rather be passive than to voice their grievance. And this was exactly consistent with my observation that day. Nobody exited their vehicle, and the way you could have responded was, A, you know, if you sort of have an aggressive type of personality or an aggressive behavior in response to conflict situations, you would get off your car, you would yell profanities at the man holding the stop sign, he would likely, do the same to you, and the conflict situation would escalate, and I talk about spillover emotions in the book. You would take them to work with you. The other response is to be indirectly aggressive. So you sit there, you huff and puff, and you don't really resolve the situation. And again, toxicity is entering your own body through these negative emotions. The third response is what most people did, which was to simply sit there. And what I did was as I chose assertive self-expression. I exited my vehicle. I asked the man holding the stop sign if he had a permit from the city to be there. And the minute he told me that he didn't, I now had a rights-based approach to resolving this conflict situation. I told him if he didn't have his permit from the city that I would appreciate if he cleared the way. And minutes later, he spoke to his manager and the road was cleared. So that's exactly how we can approach every conflict situation. Take a look objectively at what our dominant style of conflict resolution is. Try to leverage on the best that we can in the situation at hand. You know, and I talk about this, like even avoidance in certain situations could be a strategy, but you've got to do it consciously.
Mesa, this is Jonna. So much of what you're saying is resonating with me for many, many reasons, not the least of which is I'm a lawyer too, and so I deal with conflict maybe a little more than somebody who's not. But let me challenge you
just for the sake of challenging you, what would you say to a skeptic who would push back on what you're saying, even though what you're saying makes perfect sense? Like, let's say I said to you, wait a minute, Mesa, if I complain about the soup being cold, it's going to come back, you know, with a little special ingredient in it for me. Or if I walk up to the guy with the stop holding the stop sign and I ask for his credentials, you know, I stand a chance of getting shot. Like, what? How do you navigate the fear of something bad happening when you want to assert yourself in a relatively small situation like that?
Well, you have to, first of all, assess the situation. But I also talk in the book about what I call interference tactics. Of course, the life is never as you know, the example I explained. It means that it doesn't always go as smoothly as we hope. But I think the more aware you are, the more you keep alert as the situation arises, the more you'll be better equipped to respond. And when I talk about interference tactics, I'm talking about power ploys, you know, ways in which the other side will try to throw you off your game. And you have to be able to respond accordingly. And again, I've given those tools, and I've given concrete examples in the book as well as to how you deal with what I call interference tactics. You keep your focus on the solution and on what it is that you need in a given situation, despite of what it is that's thrown at you. So if the example that we just talked about, if the server comes back at you, you know, incredibly angry, you then have to assess how you're going to respond to that. You invite them back to being civil and respectful, again, you know, using the tools that I talk about in the book.
Thank you. Because I think there are a lot of people who, and I'm not saying I may have been one of them, but I think over the years, you learn how to, this is how I treat a lot of conflict. Like, I know that if I went out and I bought an ice cream cone right now, like a twist cone with chocolate sprinkles, and I ate it, I would be in seventh heaven for about 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes later, I'd be like, why the heck did I have that ice cream? Oh, my diet's ruined. I shouldn't have done it. So when I approach a conflict situation, I do definitely try to like pull myself back, because I know if I explode and maybe say the things that are really bubbling up without tempering them down, 10 minutes later, I'm going to be upset with myself for handling it that way. So I've learned to delay the gratification and not go ballistic when my soup is cold. And it's not an easy thing to learn. So I think this book is going to be fabulous for people in that situation, because that is life-changing. Learning how to respond to anything appropriately is life-changing.
Well, yes, and I mean the first thing, so a couple of things I think come to mind from what you just said. One is that we need to have compassion with ourselves. So, yes, the goal is emotional modulation. The goal is to be able to pay attention to our negative emotions as they arise. And I offer strategies in the book as to how you do that. So, of course, mindfulness is one of those, or, you know, what Eckhart calls awareness, and what I've also called awareness is one of those. There are also other ways. I talk about compassion training and eliciting positive emotions through gratitude training. And all of this is backed up by research. But so whenever we do that, and we all do it, I know that I certainly do it, and sometimes, whether you want to call it aggressive, because it goes a bit beyond being sort of assertive. As lawyers, we have to advocate for our clients, and it's very possible that we may take that approach. But again, it has to be strategic. And when we are in the grip of negative emotions, we have to regain our emotional balance by simply seeing ourselves. And through the act of repeated practice, I think we become better at it. So that even if you choose to be a little bit more than assertive in a particular situation, you're doing it consciously. You're not just doing it because that's your unconscious mode of resolving conflict.
That's a really powerful point. And you mentioned, among other brilliant people in your book, Stephen Covey, and he talks about the gaps, like that pause in between what's coming at you, what's happening, and you having that presence of mind, that awareness of how you respond. And was it Stephen Covey that dubbed the
equation of E plus R equals O, which is there's an event, there's something that's happening that you're experiencing, plus R, which is your response. That's what equals the outcome. You have so much power in that R, in that chosen R, and that takes a pause, and that takes presence, and that takes mindfulness, and that's exactly what you're saying.
That's right. That's exactly right. And Stephen Covey is the one who said exactly that, you know, between stimulus and response, there's a gap, and that gap lies in our ability to make change. And it is quite powerful. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I talk about the marshmallow study, the famous marshmallow study in my book, and how these children were followed years later, and, you know, 40 years later, and they still, the same results were replicated. And they were, you know, the ones that were, you know, great delayers were still great delayers 40 years later. And also how they then this research that showed all of the skills that, you know, that these children were engaging in distracting themselves, they were actually engaging in strategies to avoid the marshmallow in order to get the second marshmallow. And when those same techniques and strategies were taught to non-delayers, the results were replicated. So, you know, we can all teach ourselves to become those delayers, to ensure that there is more of a gap in between stimulus and response, a longer gap. And in that pause, we find the best response in the particular situation. And, you know, I always say you don't take a knife to a gunfight, you know, so you have to be strategic in how you respond.
Mesa, I believe the timing of your book is divine. I think that you're going to do a lot of good. I think that every single person could benefit from this in their families, in their relationships, in their profession, and in their ability, if you happen to be an activist, to enact change. We are wrapping up here with Mesa Malecki. She is the author of the brand new book, The Conflict Resolution Grail: Awareness, Compassion, and a Negotiator's Toolbox. Mesa, if people wanted to connect with you, learn more about you, buy your book, where do they go to do that?
Well, the book is at all of, I think, your favorite local bookstores online. It's also on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca for any Canadians. And, of course, my website is MalekiBarristers.com. And my social media links are also on the website.
Very good. Mesa, thank you so
much
for writing this book, for taking the time to talk with us. Jonna, did you have any other points or questions before we wrap up?
Only, you know, my question is, when's it going to be on audio? Because I can't wait to dig in that way.
Thank you very much. I certainly appreciate all the wonderful questions and your time with me today.
Okay. Thank you, Mesa.
Thank you.
All right. You're listening to Happy Hour here on K104, and we're not quite done yet. So come back. Segment number 3 is on the way.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time this morning here to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
That was close. It's getting there.
We got to record it.
What's that?
We got to record it.
Now, like I said, I told you, yeah. I don't want to take the live excitement away from you.
So she was so well-spoken, brilliant. We just spoke, if you missed it, with Mesa Malecki. She's the author of The Conflict Resolution Grail. Really something any person could benefit from in your life. And I just wanted to tell you, Jonna, I think she's your sister from another mister, because not only is she brilliant and she's an attorney, you got to look her up. She's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to look her up. And I think this book is, the one thing I didn't mention to her that I wanted to mention to her was, I think it's funny how we lawyers eventually all just want to write books and drink martinis. I think really that's what we want to do. It just comes with the territory, I guess.
Well, whenever you're ready.
The book sounds great. I know it.
So, Jonna, whenever you're ready to write a book, I think you have more than one book in you. And I can't wait for that to happen.
Me either. And I'm a little mad at myself that it didn't happen during this lockdown period. But you know what? I'm not going to beat myself up, because I got to be honest with you. We keep sitting here like, There's so many things that we should have got done during this lockdown because we had nothing but time. But you know what we were all busy doing during this lockdown? We were busy wondering when the hell we weren't going to be on lockdown anymore and how we were going to pay the bills and how we were going to pay our employees and how long it was going to last and what we should change and do with this and that. So it wasn't like this was a vacation. So if anybody... It wasn't a vacation. It wasn't a fun time where we could just relax and put our toes in the sand and then be creative. It was actually, when I'm under stress, I'm not creative at all. Huh?
You do need that relaxation to let the creativity flow. And if you're tense and uptight, that's likely not going to happen. So I do have a question for you. So yes. New York is in phase three now at this point. How should you
Hudson
go?
Valley.
Eat at a... I'm sorry, that's right, Hudson Valley. So how soon are you going to go out and eat inside a restaurant?
Yeah, by the time we're on the air next week, I will have a full report for you about that.
Okay. And by the time we're on the air again next week, I will have a full report of how I stayed in my apartment again.
Right. Sure you will.
Yeah. Hey, look, I will say one thing. I have been very happy and very proud of myself because I have done a crap load of writing over the last 3 months.
Good.
I have, you know, I have gotten to every weekend, and if I don't sit down and do something, I will get mad at myself. So, you know, and I recently wrote one over the weekend for my dad for Father's Day, and it's a post Aww. That came out of nowhere. I had no intent. All I intended to do was take this old poem that I had written for my dad 25 years ago after he passed away and post that on Facebook. That's all. That was my only intention, and I ended up writing probably one of the better posts I've written in quite a long time. But when it comes to a book, I'm starting to build up some material. I'm starting to think.
Well, you know where to go when you're ready to be published.
That I does. Mm-hmm. That I does.
Done deal, my friend. So,
all right. Well, I guess that's probably going to wrap things up here this morning with Happy Hour because we talked to Mace for quite some time. And it was a talk worthwhile, by the way. If you did not catch it, you can go to K104.com/happyhour later on in the week, and it will be posted there. For now, enjoy your Sunday. And be safe. Jonna and Carol, we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.